This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Thanks again for coming back and listening this week to another episode of the Magic Word Podcast. We enjoy having you as our guest and welcome you back each and every week. And this week we've got another exciting guest, someone who actually not only hosts a convention, but also has a thing called Slight Club. And we're going to talk about Slight Club. And of course, as you know from the movie about Fight Club, the first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club. Well, obviously this was kind of taken a little bit from that. But the idea is of how to get people together who have like interests and to share things for the betterment of each in the group. And so one of the things that our guest today is going to be talking about is how to perhaps form your own Slight Club or your own group of brain trusts in your area also. You may already be doing that, but if not, he's got some tips on how to do that. Plus, he talks about some of the other things he's been involved with in his magic life, in particular tricks, and that's a convention that's coming up this fall. And I guess I really haven't even mentioned who this is. The guest we have this week is Scott Robinson, and Scott is someone who also works for Microsoft and actually has that as a full-time job, and magic is something he just does in the part-time. And as you know, there are many part-time magicians who contribute so much to the community with their creativity and energy. I'd like to also remind you that this week's episode is broadcast on my YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/TexasMagician. And there you can see the video of the two of us talking during this podcast. So if you are more of a visual than an audible person, go to youtube.com/TexasMagician and check out that video. And while you're there, please subscribe to the channel. So let's bring on this week's guest. Please welcome Mr. Scott Robinson here on The Magic Word. Today I've got with me, all the way from near Charlotte, North Carolina, is a friend who is someone that I see annually at Fechter's Finger Flicking Frolic, and he is someone who is well known for his close-up acumen and skills, and his sleight of hand is unparalleled and well known among the the elite of pasteboard guys. In fact, he'd started some time ago his own Slight Club, and Slight Club is something that you don't talk about, but maybe we might today a bit. The first rule of Slight Club is you don't talk about Slight Club. But also, he is the one who has been responsible for starting the Tricks Convention, that's T-R-I-C-S, and we will talk about that to some extent, and some other people that he's been involved with and kind of what he does, because his full-time job is working then with the Microsoft, and so he's really a great IT guy that has a lot of just very creative, genius friend of mine. Please welcome, I love his first name, and his second name is okay too, Scott Robinson. Here he is. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Scott. How are you? We're going to confuse everyone by going, hey, Scott, what about Scott? So we'll see how it goes.
Maybe I'll be Scotty and you can be Scott. How's that?
Anything works.
Okay. Well, anyhow, good to have you over here then as well. And talking about Slight Club, which came first? Were they Slight Club or Tricks? Tricks has been around for a while, though, hasn't it?
Slight Club. So Tricks, this year would have been the 12th year for Tricks. Slight Club has been around for over 20 years.
Okay.
So Slight Club has been around for a very long time. It started myself, a guy named Chris Cook, who you don't know. He's more of a magic fan. He loves magic, doesn't really perform. Luke Dancy, who I'm sure you know.
Sure.
And a guy from England who used to live here in Charlotte named Andy Brockhurst. He, us four decided we needed a different approach than what kind of the normal magic club. And we started meeting weekly 20 plus years ago. It's almost 21 now. And that slowly grew where, more people came in, people left. We now probably have about 20 folks, about 15 of us meet every week. We still meet every week. We are meeting virtually now, of course, but, that's kind of what it is. And the purpose was very simple. It was feedback, direct feedback, no sugarcoating, no hurt feelings, learn how to both receive feedback, give feedback, and then throughout the years, we've done different projects. We've put out different pamphlets and booklets, and we've done lectures as a group before. One of the guys produced a deck of cards for the Trix convention. So we've used it to kind of grow everyone's skills, but at the end of the day, the goal is to just make each one's magic a little better, right? And then a little better, and hopefully a little better along the way. So
right. So kind of help each other a little bit and kind of bounce off different ideas and things.
Yeah. Yeah, but one thing I want to say about these types of groups, there's a group similar in New York, and I think the most important thing for these is when you put it together. So first, it's invitation only, and that's not so you only have a bunch of the top sleight of hand people. That's right. Not what it's about. Right. Matter of fact, I think that would be terrible, right? The point of it is to bring people together with different skill sets. Mm-hmm. That can help each other. So we have a mentalist. We have someone who's a stage magician, has done illusions in the past. We have people with someone that's really into history. So it's about pulling together a team, kind of that core team, and then bringing in others that we take on as projects, right? So if someone's putting together a new act, they may be part of the group and we help them with that, kind of getting all those different perspectives. And then the person that we're helping, their job, they have one job, and they're the filter of the feedback. Because some feedback you get is great, but it may not apply to you. Some feedback you get is terrible, and mm-hmm. you have to be the filter to kind of say, this is right for me, or this is not right for me right now, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of filter that out. So, and that's one of the things we talk about when people come, and when a new member comes, is here's your responsibility, and here's our responsibility, right? And that's kind of the way we work right. it.
Well, yeah, because, boy, a lot of things to unpack over there on that. I'm just thinking about getting – for other groups to get started like this then also, and I was thinking about how that things get to be very incestuous when it's just the same people all the time, and it's the same thing, I think, up until – I don't know, just a few decades ago, or particularly when the internet really started blossoming and we started seeing magic from other countries. Particularly, you'd have to really save up a lot of money in order to travel to FISM and go and see some other international acts or whatever. It's a lot more easy today that you can do over the internet for free to watch these kinds of things. And we're getting these outside influences, much like in the 4F convention that we used to have this, again, just a continental thing, a few people from Canada. And then they started bringing in people from overseas. And it really added a lot.
Made a big difference. It did. So that is a challenge with a group like mine. Here's the advantage. Probably only 30% have been there the whole time, right? Because people do have lives and they move, new people move into the area. Sometimes you find out everyone's not a fit for this, right? Mm-hmm. This is not for it's not the right way to approach magic for everyone. It just happens to be the right way for me. So that other 60-70% may be there for 2-3 years, then them and their family move somewhere else, and then someone else moves in. Mm-hmm. So you get that. However, we talk about Slight Club burnout a lot, right? What it looks like, how we feel about it, how we deal with it. When we get in that to that point, we start looking for a project. A project can be a person, so maybe someone who's just getting into magic that maybe we can help. Mm-hmm. Or it may be, you know, we've come up with 5, 6, 7 tricks. Let's put together a lecture. Or someone in the group may say, you know, I've never been in a magic contest. I want to put together a competition act. And we create, this is our project for the next 6 months to a year, where one of our main focuses is on that. So we usually have 2 or 3 of those going on at any one time. And I, you know, Scott, I'm wired. The way I'm wired is... though I perform occasionally, and you know, I've lectured and done things like that, and I love creating magic. But at the end of the day, I only care about one thing. What gets me up at night or gets me up in the morning is being able to help someone else be a little better. And that's kind of my approach at Microsoft too. I manage a group of really smart people there. My job is to make them better each day, right? Give them opportunities, remove obstacles. And that's kind of what Slight Club is about. For me, the part I get out of it is that, is, you know, you get to see something go from nothing to something different, mm-hmm. sometimes better, sometimes worse.
But at least different, yeah.
From here to something different. But you definitely get to see people grow. So. It's pretty cool.
And getting a group started like that, I think that that's very important. When I first did move to Houston, decades ago, that we had a small group to get together at a bar, and there was Bill Palmer and Charles Green III and Dick Hatch, and I think there were two or three others of us, and we would work on something, and it was I can't remember if it was weekly or monthly that we met. It's been so many years ago, but the point is that it wasn't a club meeting. We came there to do magic, and that's the problem, I think, with most clubs. It boils down to a lot of politics. I mean, sure, socializing and having a good time and talking to people is great for one thing, but then I just don't like to have to worry about, okay, well, we need to take a vote on Article 7 of Paragraph 3 of our Constitution. Yeah.
So one of the things we talk about, and that the guys in Slack Club will, guys and girls, will give me a hard time, is they pick on me about this all the time, is I believe you have to have a leader. That's super important. Mm-hmm. You have to have a leader in these situations.
That's a dictator, basically.
Yes, and it's not a democracy. It's a Scottocracy is what they always say, right? Because at some point, you have to make a decision to move forward, to move off of something that you've been working on, because there's a limited amount of time. And we try to get things done. Part of one of our projects is the Tricks Convention every year, right? Mm-hmm, at the end of the day, someone has to make the decision on, the order of lectures and, I get all the feedback, right, and stir it around, and something comes out of it. But having someone that people understand at the end of the day, that's where the decision – and that kind of sounds – I'm saying it. I'm going, oh, this sounds terrible. And if this was a normal magic club, it wouldn't work, right? Mm-hmm. But since we all come together for a very, very singular purpose of helping each other get better, it keeps politics out of it. Because you never have to – no one has to worry about, somebody – this not happening because these people didn't like it, right?
Right, right.
They know it's just my decision, right? They can talk to me about it. Takes away all politics. There's no – and, we don't have rules. So it makes it pretty easy, right? We don't want to hurt each other's feelings. That is one of the rules is don't – feedback can hurt. Feedback – even in the best situation,
honest feedback can be considered as criticism that you're calling someone's baby ugly, basically.
Yeah, and you are. I mean, you are.
Yeah.
But not from a place of
hurt,
being mean. Right. Mm-hmm. And I have seen, and I've probably been one of those people at times where when you're in your 20s, even doing magic, I'm sure me and you are about the same age or close to it. In our 20s, you think you know more than you do.
Right.
And you give feedback when it's not asked for. And, you probably I still have a friend, very close friend, who he tells me about the first time he met me in my 20s. And I gave him feedback and it hurt his feelings. And he still remembers it. Even though we're good friends, he still remembers it. So giving feedback is an art form. Right. And it takes practice. Receiving it is even harder. Right.
Understood. There was a friend of mine here in town. I'll mention his name, Rick Abair, who is a magician, and he was very, very devout and working towards better and better routines all the time, and actually got to doing an excellent job on a memorized deck and Rubik's Cube and everything else he does right now. But anyhow, in leading up to all this, that he asked me one time early on when he was kind of getting started in magic, that if I could recommend him to go to the 4F convention. And I said, no, I can't, because it's my reputation's on the line then too, and I don't think you're ready yet. And he took that a little bit hard, I think. I've been giving him a couple of private lessons then also. And then about a year or so later, he'd ask again, or maybe I came to him and said, I think you're ready, or he's asked if he would do it again. And I said, yeah, I think that would be. And then the outcome of that, the story I wanted to just say, is that after he was there, that he said to me, Scott, I'm so glad that you said no the first time, because I was definitely not ready. When I see the quality of people who are here now, I was out of their league. I feel closer to being in sync with many of the people right now than I would have then. And so thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, so that is fantastic. So I know you have a lot of 4F listeners, but for those that don't know, it's not just an invitation to get to go to 4F. Mm-hmm. People have to vouch for you. And it doesn't work out every time.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? But when you vouch for someone, you are putting your neck on the line. And there are consequences when things don't work out right.
Yeah.
So, and I, I agree with all those things because I think it's a unique group at the 4F. I love that we have more of other countries coming.
Right.
I see much more diversity just in the last 10 years. The the difference, and when I say diversity, I'm not talking about in the traditional.
Yeah, I understand.
Of diversity. I'm talking about in approaches to magic, right?
Yes.
Just
their routine, their act, their moves that they would make, even the close-up choreography of things that are different that some people bring to the table from other countries, that it's that's a different way of looking at that. I hadn't thought very about different. Using this or that.
Mm-hmm. So how long have you been going to 4F?
About 35 years.
So a lot longer than me. I started in the mid-90s.
Okay. I was in the early 80s, I think.
Yeah. Just since I've been going, it's not... Not just since. That's a substantial amount of time. Yeah. But it's very different, right? And the quality of magic you see now is tremendous, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're like me, but I love the fact that we usually get to see something before anybody else sees it.
Sometimes there are people who are working their FISM act, and they show it to us first before they take it to FISM, and Obi will say, this is someone who is probably going to win, and sometimes they do.
They usually do, yeah. So, you know, 4F was kind of the model for Trix.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so 4F has evolved, right? It's a larger convention now.
Talk a little bit about that, about how it did evolve and how it got started. And again, you said it started, I guess, from the Slight Club, and
So basically there was a convention held in a small town outside of Charlotte. It was called the East Coast Super Session. It was held by run by a guy named Doc Dougherty.
I know Doc.
Good convention, right?
Yeah.
It was a very good convention. It had Don England, had Mike Gallo. It was just a fantastic convention. And the next year they couldn't really get it off the ground. Yeah, running a convention is hard and you have to have working capital, right? That's
right.
The truth.
That's
you had to have working capital. So Chastin Criswell started a smaller version here in Charlotte, and he did it for 2 years, and he got hit in it with a – do you remember when there was the there was gas shortage because of a hurricane that hit? Mm-hmm. It happened to be on the weekend – that he was doing the convention. So his turnout was very low.
Bad timing.
Feel so bad for him. But it did, he was like, okay, that's enough of this. Because there's no money to be made in magic conventions anyway.
Yeah.
So I took it over. That would be 12 years ago. But because I had been to 4F and because I had a clear idea. So One of my strengths is I'm usually able to look at situations, and this helps me, I think, at Microsoft, and get really pragmatic about what makes things work and what doesn't make things work for me, mm-hmm. right? I'm not saying for everybody, but for me. And, what I realized about 4F is the acts, the shows, the lectures are not the important part.
Mm-hmm.
It's the icing. What's important is the amount of time people get to spend outside of those, right? It's the
right.
socializing. That's why I go. I don't know about you. That's why I go.
No, I absolutely love that. It's not just that convention, but other conventions then as well. I think that we go then for the sessioning part of that. And I was, for an example, talking with Josh Jay about his Magi Fest, and he was complaining a little bit, if you would, because there were people who were not paying registration but coming to the hotel just to hang out in the session. And he said, I think that's a big part of why people come and pay. So it kind of feels almost that these people should be paying too.
Yeah, but, so – we face that at Trix too.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't care about it. Here's why. First, part of the glue that helps the social aspect are the events, because people leave a lecture and they sit down and they start talking about what they've just experienced,
sure.
the show they just saw, et cetera. So those people are missing out on those things. However, if I really care, and I do, about making magic a little better,
mm-hmm.
pulling the community together that loves the type of magic I like, which is close up and parlor. If they sit in the bar of the hotel and get to sit there and talk to Ozzie Wind or Danny D'Ortiz, I'm not losing any money, right?
Right.
They could have come to the convention, but that wasn't what. So I don't care about that.
You like creating the atmosphere and the.
Yeah, it's And atmosphere is key, right?
Right.
I hope you make it to Trix one day, because what's nice about it is you come out of the performing room, the lecture room. That's the restaurant. The doors out of the lecture room lead into the restaurant. So there's 30 tables right there to sit at.
Wow.
Right? So people come out and are immediately sessioning. So we got lucky in the way the
setup. Are the public staying at the hotel then also? Or are there people
sitting? They are, but we usually take most of it. Okay. So, you know, my first year, I think we did 66 people. We now do 165, and that's a cutoff.
Have you been to Lance Pierce's Pebblepalooza?
I have.
Similar to that. Is it similar to that then as well?
Similar to that. So if you think about Lance's piece, Lance has very few scheduled events.
That's basically right.
It's four, right?
Yeah.
I have more than that.
Okay.
But I make sure there's at least an hour and a half between every event.
Mm-hmm.
I also make sure we don't start until 11 o'clock in the morning so people can sleep in.
Good.
Right? So there's some things we do. We make sure lunches and dinners are always an hour and a half to 2 hours. So even though we have more planned events, I start by planning the session time, right?
Excellent.
I put that on the schedule first.
Wow.
Then I work everything else around it. So one of the other things I felt was important and was an important part of Trix is I wanted real people to see what we see,
mm-hmm.
which is the best close-up magicians in the world, right?
Right?
We go to these conventions, we see them, right? Like, regular people don't get to, if they don't see them on video or on Penn and Teller Foolish or any of those, they don't get to see that. So what we do is, so our space only holds packed, it will hold about 195, right?
Okay.
Packed,
mm-hmm.
right? But if I have 165 people, magicians, and then I sell 65 public show tickets, that means I have a problem. Right?
Right,
I can't put everything in there. So basically what we do is we cut off magician registrations to see the final show in the room at 120. So that gives us plenty of space to sell tickets to the lay public for the final show.
How do you market that to the lay people?
So we started small when we only were having 100. We had a smaller space. I don't have to market it at all.
Really?
Here's what happened. In the beginning, we would have friends say, hey, we're having a magic show, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. The next year, those people would say, hey, I'm going to this magic show again. You want to come? Now, I have to turn people away.
It's just because of word of mouth.
Just because of word of mouth.
Wow.
No, it's a 12-year process, but it's been that way for the last eight, nine years.
It's an ideal situation.
So we have, I would say 90% of the people that come every single year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's not a cheap ticket, right? So it's not $10 to come to a magic show. We treat it as a date night. We tell them it's a show PG-13,
right.
Not because of language or anything, but we want that atmosphere.
You don't have adults rather than children because it's not.
And we pack the people in to the room, right? So it feels like the energy in the room is fantastic, right?
Right.
I know you've done this. If you do a lot of shows, you would rather have 50 people in a room for 25.
That's right. Right.
Then 300 people in a room for 700.
Much better energy. Right.
Yeah. Much better. And it's just, you know, every show, you know, when you end shows with Ozzie Wynn and Danny D'Ortiz and these guys of this quality, you don't know what's going to happen with regular people when you first start doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But they give them all standing ovations.
Wow.
They know they've seen something special, right? They absolutely know they've seen something special. And that, to me, if my wife said, Scott, we can't do tricks anymore. We're, you know, it's so much time. You lose money every year, all that stuff. That's the part I would miss the most is that. Now, we are doing shows here in the little town. I actually live in a small town called Fort Mill in South Carolina. My wife opened a business in the worst possible time in the middle of the pandemic. But part of that is called the Magic Canvas, and it's a sip and paint. She's only at about 20% capacity right now, but twice a month we do magic shows, right? We only have, instead of 70 people in the space, we only have 20, right?
Yeah.
But, and we spread them out, so the energy's not as great. But, you know, we're using local talent right now, and, but we're using people that, that folks would know of, like Brian Saint, who was on Fool Us. So it's another venue and another opportunity for us to have real people get to see good close-up magic in a really intimate setting.
Have you thought about having a second show? In other words, that trying to pack in more public for maybe a, not a matinee, but maybe a second show. If you have one at 7, another one at 10 or something for tricks.
For tricks, I have a guy who brings that up every year, right?
Okay. I mean, if you're looking at it for being profitable versus having a good time and maybe losing a little bit of money, there it depends on what your goal is.
And my goal is not monetary.
Okay.
So we even thought about moving it to another location where we could have more people just for the show. You know, you've seen conventions do that. Mm-hmm. But there's also this comfort factor. Here's one thing I've learned from – there's a convention you've been – Winter Carnival of Magic.
Of course.
Right? It used to be in Gatlinburg. Now it's in Pigeon Forge. Mm-hmm. It lost attendees when they moved because people love to be comfortable. They love to know that they walk 10 feet out of the hotel and there's the Shoney's.
Everything was right there.
Or they do this, right?
Yeah.
So when you move, when you change anything that they get comfortable with, you are taking a risk. Sometimes the risk is worth taking. Sometimes it's may not be worth taking, but I think that's, and that's the way I am with conventions. You know, it's, you go 4F, I sit in the same seat every time for every show.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'm comfortable. You probably do too.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. We all do that. So that comfort, I think, is important. And when you make a, decide to change that, you're taking a risk. Also, it's hard to put on a show. Yeah, you know, I tell people all the time, convention shows are like nothing you've ever done before. Because first, it's only going to happen one time. It's never going to happen again. These performers in this environment with this situation, you usually it's a close-up parlor show. So
it's
we have
performance
an hour
art, something that happens that place and time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's not repeatable. And there's something cool about that.
That's true.
And there's also, as the person running it, there's something very stressful about it as well.
Yeah.
But that's kind of, to me, I don't know if I'll ever do it. My friend Eddie Wade, who really is, you know, he runs Magic Methods. His brain is wired to think about how to monetize things. And he's always talking to me about how I can monetize it more. But, you know, Trix is one of those conventions that some years you make a little, some years you lose a little. I lose when I go, I really want this person. Let's bring them in, right?
Yeah,
probably overbook. Yeah, Josh and Andy tell me all the time I overbook the convention for the number of people I have, but it's fun.
Well, yeah, it is. I'm looking forward to attending then sometime. Typically, it's in the fall, isn't that correct?
November. It's in November.
November, yeah. That's
usually the first full weekend, so full Thursday, Friday, Saturday in November.
And so is that a pretty good time? I guess, again, it's not really getting into the holiday season when magicians are usually booked to work a holiday show, so that kind of...
It's early enough.
It's early, yeah. I think that'd be a good time.
I can even go one weekend after that.
Uh-huh.
And like last year, we had to do that because it was... So I'll tell you the story. Yeah, you probably know I'm good friends with Steve Beam.
Yes.
And Steve always comes to the convention, and sometimes we do a little event, something special. We call it Steve Beam's Door Jam, where Steve finds some people to teach some tricks, and we tell stories about slide club or trapdoor days or whatever, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So last year Steve comes to me and goes, Scott, I'll be there for you. I you know I'm going to be there for you, but there's always a but with Steve, right? You know, I really want to go to this collector's thing, right? Mm-hmm. And this was early, so. And it was going to be the same weekend. It was a collector's conference somewhere. And
well, it was one up in, not Kansas City, but it was up in was it Michigan or Minnesota or someplace.
Well,
it was David Sandy
canceled.
And Bill Smith.
It ended up getting canceled anyway. It was Mike Caveney's.
Oh, Caveney's, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so he had tentative dates. So I moved the convention one weekend later to accommodate Steve and some of the other. There was more than just Steve that wanted to go. But then something happened. They ended up canceling that. But it didn't affect my...
Your event. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Steve was able to attend then.
Steve was able to attend. Well, he attends every. Yeah.
Yeah.
He would have, I know he would have skipped going to that to come. He's an important part. So Steve is
How
one
so
of those.
Why?
he is super important to my convention. Not because of the formal stuff he does, but okay, this is a big trick secret. I tell Trick, me and Steve have an agreement that he's going to give me a hard time the whole weekend. Okay. So he's in the crowd with his one-liners, and I have to take it like a man, right?
Yeah.
But we always have a payoff where I usually get him back. Like, so he's getting – 2 years ago, he's out of the room, and I'm up there kicking off the convention.
Yeah.
And I go – I say something. I pause. I look for Steve, and he's not in the room. So I go, okay, guys, Steve's going to be here soon. You know he's going to say something to me. So as soon as he does, as soon as he has a wisecrack, everyone boo him. So, you know, he's gone years where people laugh and cut up and he comes in. And literally 30 seconds after he sits down, he says something and everyone boos him. And it was just one of those funny things.
He said, okay, Scott, you got me. Because he probably knew right away what was going on.
Yeah, he knew. He looked at me because I couldn't keep a straight face.
Steve's one of my favorite guys. I had him on an episode of the podcast here a while back then as well. And, of course, he has been an MC.
I read it. He didn't. I did listen to it. I noticed he didn't mention my name. I'm mentioning his, but
it was kind of funny also because that after I had recorded our conversation, that it was a few weeks later, actually a couple months after that we had recorded it before I actually posted it. Once it was posted, that Charlie Randall from H&R Magic Books had contacted Steve and said, hey, I enjoyed the podcast. And he said, what podcast? And he said, the one you do with Scott. And he said, well, I thought he didn't like it. He said, because nothing ever happened. He never told me that it was – and I just thought maybe he thought it was a bad conversation, so he decided to ditch it. what does TRIX actually stand for then? I mean, it's an acronym?
It's an acronym. It's spelled TRICS. And Chasten Criswell, the person we were talking about earlier, he came up with this. It stands for – so that's the acronym, TRICS, no K. But the real name of the convention is the Carolina Close-Up Convention. Notice there's three C's. There's a little alliteration there.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at TRICS, that's T-R-I-C's, right? So it's Tri-C's is what it really is.
Carolina's Close-Up Convention.
Carolina Close-Up Convention. Yeah. So.
Well, that was kind of like in Dallas that for a while they called out the Dallas Close-Up or the D-Cup. Or Close-Up or D-Cup.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It was kind of funny.
Yeah.
but I wanted to go back again to the Slide Club for just a minute because, again, there are some groups out there across the country or the world that might be wanting to replicate some sort of a brain trust of friends of trying to put that together. And I assume, obviously, it starts with just one or two or three people saying, hey, let's get together and talk about whatever. So what initiated that?
Okay, so first, you're right, it starts with friends. The second part, though, is you have to be open to having people that aren't your friends as part of the group. If your goal is to make everyone better,
sure,
right?
Sure.
So you have to have people, right? That to me is one of the important things is you have to do that. It quickly grows, but you do start with friends. Our rule, though, so how do you keep people coming with a small group of people, maybe four?
Mm-hmm.
And you're meeting every week. And Scott, I feel really strongly that meeting weekly is critical.
Really?
And the reason is you can't hold each other accountable if you meet once a month.
Why? I don't understand. Why not?
So if you come every week and we've helped you with something and you come back in and we go, okay, let's see what you've been working on your nickels to dimes routine.
Right, right.
And you go, I haven't done anything. The guys are going to give you hell.
Yeah.
All right?
Okay.
I'm just letting you – we're going to say, why are you wasting our time?
Yeah.
If you're not going to put in – if it's a month, hearing that once a month is nothing. Hearing it every week, you know, people start holding themselves accountable, saying, I do not want to let the group down. They took 2 hours out of this meeting, gave me all this feedback, and I did nothing with it. That's pretty selfish, right? To take someone's time and not do anything with it, right? So by doing it weekly, we're able to hold each other accountable and really see the progress. Because we do have people that don't come as often, right? But what happens is they take the feedback And without anyone there to help to get a second set of eyes, they take it and start twisting it and turning it. And maybe it ends up in a good place, but they didn't have the checks and balances to ensure they were going, because we all view ourselves as being pretty cool when we do magic, and none of us are. Right. There's a few of us that are, but most of us aren't. So, you know, sometimes you need, I think we need our friends or our colleagues to be honest with us about that type of stuff. And weekly has definitely helped our group.
Well, that makes sense, I guess, then, because they might be chastised in that week, but they don't want to come back the second week and then be chastised against, like, no, I still haven't done
or
anything.
Or not it's even like, doing it.
You need to get out of here if you're not going to participate.
So we've only, and Scott, we do have a process. That, so here's the rule. If you were part of my group,
yep,
and you said, Scott, there's a great guy, need to bring him in. All right, awesome, Scott, bring him in. And let's say we had one guy who didn't even sit at our table. He would come, he would sit at the table for a little bit, and then he would, when we met at a restaurant, he would just go flirt with the bartender.
Okay.
Right? So how do we deal with that? Well, if you invited him, it's your responsibility to say it's not working out. So that puts tremendous pressure on you to make sure the people you bring is someone that's going to be a good fit for the team.
And be a contributor too.
Mm-hmm. And be a contributor. And that's the thing a lot of people miss in the beginning. They think they're there to help themselves. Over time, they realize that 90% is giving and 10% is receiving.
Wow, that is really enlightening. I hadn't thought about that from that standpoint, because typically, again, if you would, people join organizations to get something out of it, whether it's networking to try to get jobs, if it's going to be a business organization or something or whatever, or if you are attending a meeting that you're wanting to hear the lectures and learn something or whatever. And so, again, you're joining organizations to have an opportunity to take something from it. But I like the idea of what you're saying there, that actually it's just the opposite, that you're there to contribute and help others.
And you do get something out of it.
Well, sure. But,
you know, mm-hmm. But there's a difference. So ego is kind of involved in everything we do, right?
Well, yeah.
But I think that there's a direct stroking of ego where you have people tell you how great you are and all that type of stuff, and you get what you need. But there's this other where you give to a situation, and that pride you get when you see them in front of a real audience, or, you know, we've had a number of people go on Fool Us and do very well. When you see them, routine that we built, mm-hmm. there at Slight Club, like John Michael Hinton was on Fool Us. He did an original Rubik's Cube routine. And it came about 100% at Slight Club, because he had got a new gimmick, and we sat there and said, what can we do different? What can we do different? And one guy said one thing, and one guy said another thing, and we kept going and, you know, kind of built this up to something we couldn't possibly do, right? So we have – so some of the other rules is you're not allowed to use two words early on in the process. You can't say – you can't use the C word or the P word. So let me tell you what they are. So the C word is commercial, because saying the word commercial, saying I want it to be commercial too early in the process,
yeah,
creates some limitations just too early in the creative process,
huh.
Right?
Okay.
We understand down the road your audience has to love it,
sure.
Right? We get that. That's in everything, right? But we don't want to use it too early in the process, right? Because sometimes we can take a great trick and have a bad presentation that's not commercial, or, you know, we can work on the presentation later. The other is the P word, which is, I know you've heard this. You probably have given someone feedback, and, you know, they ask you for feedback, and you go, you know, maybe da 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 da, and they go, it plays, right?
In other words, it wastes time.
So, well, it may be great, right? And, you know, let's face facts. Lay people don't know what good magic is.
That's true. And also the same thing when they hear lines that are we consider stock. It's like, that's the first time I've ever heard it. Obviously, like when people say to us, can you make my wife disappear? They think that's the most hilarious original line that you've ever heard.
Right. But that should, to me, that's not what we're after.
Yeah, sure.
People can make a good living doing Professor's Nightmare, Cups and Balls, and Cut and Reach for Rope. They can, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But our group wants to have something to say, right? We try to get people to not have – everything doesn't have to have deep meaning, but you need to know as a performer what you're trying to say, right? So, you know, that's kind of – that's why if people say it plays, that's usually a red flag. They're not a great fit for our group. Now, we want it to play.
Yes.
Right? At some point, it has to play. But when you're going through the process of building something, bad ideas are as useful as good ideas. And I always tell new people, the most important thing you learn here is not the answers, but what are the right questions, right? Mm-hmm. It really is about asking the right questions to lead you down different paths of exploration. I love magic not because – so I don't get a kick out of performing for regular people. Okay, I love performing for magicians. Love it. Love it. But I really love working on new stuff and exploring that journey of going from nothing to something. And when I say nothing, we don't really start at nothing. I know that. We start on great ideas that already exist.
That you expand on, sure.
Right, we expand on it. But I love that part. So I'm kind of babbling.
No, that's making perfect sense. I understand exactly what you're saying, and that it is true that a lot of times people, I think, are justifying what their routine is. In other words, that when you're trying to give someone some valuable experience that you can say, look, from my experience, that this is what I suggest that you might do this or that or whatever, but they're defensive. Again, you're calling their baby ugly, going back to what we'd said then earlier. And so when they're going to finally just go up and say, well, it plays, meaning obviously that, the public likes it. But again, the public likes, you know, a lot of things that I don't understand.
The public does like a lot of things. And again, I think it's okay if that's what you – if that's the story you're trying to tell.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
If you – you know, we have this discussion every year. So we have this holiday party, and I go around the room, and everyone says what they think they accomplished that year with Slight Club and what they wish they would have accomplished with Slight Club, right? Mm-hmm. And then I kind of give my opinion, right, on where we are, whether we – we're better that year, whether we accomplished the stuff we wanted and that type of stuff. But kind of the, you know, as we go through those motions, you, I can't get the right word. So let's see. When I talk about this stuff, Scott, I'm pretty leery about certain things because I did a lecture on this. I don't know if you remember. I did a lecture on this at 4F.
I do remember. Yes. It was only like about 15, 20 minutes. It was a short
15 minutes, like a TED Talk.
TED Talk kind of thing, yeah.
And it was 10 minutes exactly because I hit my mark and no one else did.
Well, that's why I wanted to expand on this to talk a little bit more.
If Christian and Catalina are on, I hit my mark. No one else did. I don't even remember who else was in it that year. But Carl Hine didn't miss. You did not hit your time. I did. The one non-professional is the only one that hit their time. But I had people say, who are you to tell people what is good or not? And that's not the point of any of this.
Right.
It is opinion. It absolutely is opinion.
It's an objective opinion that I think that people, they can take or not. But I think that all opinions are valid to one degree or another.
Oh, I know where I was going. I was going about ego, right?
Yeah.
I think it's perfectly okay. And we have this discussion every year is, why do you do magic? Why? Really, why do you do it? What, you know, if you could sing really well, would you be a singer instead? Right? Do you only do magic because it's a craft you can learn versus be born with?
Mm-hmm.
Is it about your ego? Are you doing it because it makes you feel good? Or are you doing it for some other reason? And there's no right or wrong answer here,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But it gives perspective on the direction you're going, right? So when your personal ego is the number one reason driving you performing, meaning it's not magic,
yeah,
it's not your
look
of magic.
Look at me.
You would do it if you were a good singer, you would be a singer. You just want to be the center of attention,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Then it plays is an appropriate place to be.
Uh-huh.
It's going to fulfill that need.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's something deeper, right? Maybe you want to share something a life experience with people, or you want to share just a little bit of wonder so that they can feel some of the stuff you feel, right? I think those are different approaches, and it plays never sets well there because you want to do more. I want a method that people cannot figure out. I don't think there are any, but that's what I'm striving for, right?
Right.
We can do things to hide our methods, but there's a lot of smart people that if they sat down for a week, they could figure out most things. You ask most people how does sawing a lady in half work, they'll go, I have no idea. And if you go, think
really?
About it.
Yeah.
Think about it. They always figure it out. Always. You know, at least one of the methods that have been used in history, right? They come up with something. So I think that the ego piece, and it's something important to understand about ourselves. The earlier we are in life, it's more about that. The later we are in life, the more it's about other things. I think for us, as we get older, it's about being around people, the socializing, sharing our experiences,
right.
Those types of things. Learning from other people, right? Some of the best performances I ever seen, I'm sure you've seen this, was when David Williamson was in the circus show.
Mm-hmm.
That moment when he sat down on the stage with a kid and just talked to them. No magic, yet magic, right?
Right.
No astonishment, but pretty darn astonishing, right? I just thought those are things that we have the opportunity to do just as humans, not as magicians.
But that has to be something I believe, Scott, would be in conjunction with your regular show. In other words, that I think one of the things that makes that strong for David is because that he has already proven his magical prowess,
absolutely,
if you will. And now you're seeing the personal tender side of him.
Yeah.
So I think the more facets of your personality that you can present to an audience, that the more they're going to love you and not just a generic Muzak musician.
I agree. But here's the reason I bring it up. David sat down and thought about it.
Good
point.
Right?
If you hear him tell the story about it, he remembers someone in his past that would spend this time talking to the kids,
mm-hmm,
right? And it meant something to him. So, yes, it's cool for us, but he's really sharing something that's important to him, right?
Right.
And I'm not, you know, I do one serious piece in my show. Right. You've seen the serious piece.
I have. And in fact, I would like to I'm going to point people to go to the magicwordpodcast.com website. And I'm going to show that video. And just briefly, I know you
fantastic.
Have an autistic son. And this is a coin routine that you did in talking about him and that situation. And I just think that that's beautiful. And it does show your personal side.
Well, thank you. It plays. I'm joking. So, but it was one of those things, you know, life hits you. Ooh, you know, we've all been through
difficult
things.
Times.
And we make decisions that, you know, we look back on and we're not sure about. And then we make decisions we look back on we're not sure about. And boy, we're sure glad we made them.
Right.
And Shane is now 15. He just turned 15. And we adopted him when he was newborn. We were at the hospital when he was born.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's on the autism spectrum, and he's also bipolar, which is a tough combination. But he also is hilarious. Can I tell a story?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
So me and my wife are on the board for a nonprofit called Best Buddies. It's all over the country. And Best Buddies basically goes into schools and matches up neurotypical kids. I'm going to use some of the terminology there.
Okay.
So normal kids, what people would say normal kids, and kids that are maybe Down syndrome or autistic or in the schools, and gives them someone at the school that can help them integrate easier into that kind of social network. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So we're on the board of that. And we were holding a gala. My wife was running the gala, and we hired magicians to come in. We hired Cody Clark to do his autism show.
Mm-hmm.
We hired a bunch of local magicians like John Hinton and Brian Sane and Joseph Daniels and Tiffany Allen. All of those came in and did walk around magic. Well, Shane has always loved magic, and he practices it occasionally, like most teenagers. We're there and he disappears.
Oh boy.
I'm like freaking out.
Of course,
right?
You would. Yeah, as a parent.
Because he could walk off.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So we start looking for him. And I find him, he's in the bathroom, and he's like, I'm distressed. I just need some time, which is fantastic. He's
mm-hmm.
taking the time.
Mm-hmm.
I leave, I go back out, and I look, and he is over with people doing magic for them.
How neat.
He was getting up the courage, right, to do it. And not only was he doing it, he was confident. It was like a different kid, right? And he was doing two tricks. He learned Josh Jay's handling of the ashes trick using a pool cue, which is in one of his booked for the public, and he was doing a key card control. Okay. Right? That's the only thing he was doing. So the ending of the story is awesome. So we leave the we were so proud, right? So we're leaving the event, and he goes, "Dad, I got $33." Like, we just ran this. I'm like, "You didn't ask people for money, did you?" He went, "Oh, no, I would never do that. I just did a trick for them. And when I was done, I took my hat off and said, you can tip if you want to." So he got $33. So
cool.
No matter what, he can be a busker down the road. So.
That's great. Yeah. I can see why he'd be certainly a proud papa. You know, and also I was going to briefly talk about the fact that you are full time, have another job, as you were talking about with Microsoft and everything, particularly in the information technology area of that. How do you balance that with magic? Now, you said earlier that you prefer to work for magicians, and so I assume that you don't do like work restaurants. And I know
I did all that stuff when I was younger. You know, I was a theme park magician for 5 years. So when I was 20. So how do I balance that? So first, I've been at Microsoft 29 years.
Mm-hmm. And also with your family and with a challenged child.
I compartmentalize a lot.
Interesting.
So Shane goes to a school for kids on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. So, knowing he's taken care of that way helps in other ways. So, but, you know, I do magic at night. So first, Slight Club is – we used to always be on Tuesdays because of the pandemic. We're Mondays. We're Monday at 7 o'clock Eastern every Monday. Mm-hmm. My wife knows that. She's been putting up with it for 20-plus years, right?
Decades, yeah.
So that also, I have my own space. We both have our own space in the house, which is really important. We also have our own interests, right? But, you know, I stop working at a certain time. So I have my calendar blocked off so that I am as efficient as possible, right, during the workday. My team knows after a certain amount of time, unless it's an emergency, it can wait till the next day, right? It's about setting boundaries,
okay,
you know? And the older you get, the easier it is to set boundaries is what I found. You know,
that's true.
At the beginning of your career, you say yes to everything. Later in your career, you say no to a lot more.
Well, that's the truth, brother. I'm seeing that as I'm getting older, that I'm not doing nearly what that I was from before. But for example, I was talking, though, with Jamie Salinas, a buddy of mine here, who is a part-time professional, and he works also in the IT business. And sometimes he will take off lunchtime and maybe take an extended lunch because he has a show that he's doing for some corporation or something. Uh-huh. Or he may have to leave a little bit early in the evening, but he balances that very well with his job. It's just kind of, again, setting priorities as best he can.
That's it. It's
and when I traveled with my job, I used to go to magic conventions. I knew that, let's say that they were going to be having the Magi Fest, and so I coordinated that weekend to be having business in Columbus, Ohio. So I would travel there and then stay for the weekend. And so if there were conventions wherever I had a territory that allowed me to travel,
I would do exactly the same thing. So before I became a manager at Microsoft, I had accounts, right? I was what was called an application development manager. And like when they would have the New York Coin Magic Symposium up at D'Souza's place, I happened to have a customer in King of Prussia. Mm-hmm. It was time for a visit when it was time for that, right? So absolutely, plan those things out as much as possible.
As much as you can. Yep, that's true. Well, that sounds great. Anything that you're really working on then right now? Or is anything that Slight Club's going to have a new book coming out or anything?
Here's what I'm working on. So I'm probably performing live more than anybody in my group right now for real people, right? Yeah. Because of Janet's business. So I'm always the host for the shows, and I do a couple things. So I'm getting to work on new material. My rule was every show we do, I have to do something new, right? Because if I stink a little bit, kind of learning like open mic, in a comedy club, that's okay because the featured performer's coming up, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what we did. I'm working on material there.
But you're thinking about putting into your show then later, but again, you don't have really a show for the public.
Well, my wife has said, you know, Scott, for us to really make money, we need to stop paying these other people, and you need to have a one-man show.
Yeah, yeah.
so that when someone's not available, you're there, and we can.
That's a good idea. There's more and more people who are doing one-man shows.
Yeah, So that's what we're, you know, and I don't know if you know this, but one of my favorite one-man shows, I'm going to tell you about two. My favorite, one of my favorite one-man shows is Hannibal's one-man show, which is very good. Uh-huh. And most of that was built at Slight Club. I would say 95% of his one-man show was built at Slight Club one way or the other. The other, my wife's favorite one-man show is Eric DeCamps.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So before we came on, you know, we were talking about professional wrestling and Max Maven.
Right.
So the way I met Eric is I was close-up chair for a convention in Charlotte years ago. 20 plus years ago. And I had seen Eric at an SAM convention, wanted to book him. And it was when he was young and, you know, not as wrinkled as he is now. So Eric. So I call him up. I'm excited to book him and tell him what's going on. I went, but we don't have much money. And just so you know, if you want to be booked at Trix, that's the line I still use. All right. Most of the time it's we have no money, but so we don't have much money. And we didn't. He went, well, you're in Charlotte. And he goes, can I ask you a weird question? And I went, yeah. He went, do you know who Ric Flair is? So Ric Flair is.
Yeah, I know.
Right? And behind me, yeah. The picture, a painting of Ric Flair. And I went, yeah, we do. I do. He went, do you think you could get me a picture or something? Or and I went, we can take you by his house. Right. Because my brother works for the WWE now and WCW back then. He's a referee. My brother just won referee of the year. It was voted by fans. So pretty cool. He won an award. So Eric came down and did this convention for me and got to see Flair's house. So that was kind of
did it. A drive-by.
Yeah, we did drive-by. Yeah. So it was it's cool. But because we know Rick and everything, we have some of his old robes. So one of the things I used to do when Eric worked the first Trix convention, I told him he could come out for his lecture dressed in one of Flair's robes.
Oh, cool. I bet he loved
that.
So
we brought that. Yeah. So, yeah. So kind of
fun. How fun is that? Well, listen, as we wrap up, I want to ask you one last question. And because my podcast is called The Magic Word, that so you've kind of already answered that earlier on, and that is what your philosophy of life is. What is it that gets you up each day?
So I think normally – so I've been thinking about this because I knew it was coming. The most important word in my life, magic or otherwise, is compassion. Mm-hmm. That's it, right? I try to live my life that way, even when I have to deliver tough messages or give critical feedback, right?
Sure.
And definitely the way I try to treat people. So compassion is kind of my magic word. So
I like that. Very good. Compassion. And that's shown by everything that you've been saying throughout this whole thing about the passion that you've had for having Trix despite it losing money or whatever, and also the compassion you've had for others whenever you're giving advice, and then with your son and other organizations you've been involved with and leading the team of other brilliant people and things you do. So you do have a lot of compassion. That's a very good word.
Thank you, Scott. I've had a great time. I hope we can do this again sometime.
Well, I'm looking forward to it every time we get a talk. It's always a lot of fun. Right. And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Scott Robinson. This is Scotty Allen. Thank you very much, Scott, for being my guest here this week. A lot of interesting information that you shared here with both myself and the listeners. I hope everyone enjoyed that as much as I did, and perhaps that might inspire some of you to go out and to form your own slight clubs in your local area then as well. Well, listen, just before we close, one last thing I would like to remind you could really help out the Magic Word Podcast by just going and leaving a 5-star recommendation on iTunes and a nice comment. We've had quite a few here recently. I just wondered, in case you're wondering what kind of things to say, if you're kind of looking for the right words, here are a couple of 5 stars that we had received, some comments where it said, Scott Wells does a great job of interviewing magicians of all kinds, plus convention updates and information. The next best thing, if you can be there in person. Scott has you covered. Another one after I had my 600th episode recently, they said, thank you, Magic Word Podcast. This is a wonderful resource and a frequent companion for this sibling in the magical arts. Congratulations on 600 episodes. Really, truly amazing work, Scott. And one other that says, enjoy magic. Want to be inspired? This is a podcast for you. Every episode is professionally put together. The interview and news are always informative. Thank you for your hard work. And one last thing, and I'll just leave you with this before we close. And it was a very nice compliment where a few years ago I had someone who had said, Scott Wells is capturing the voices of magic episode by episode. Imagine having candid conversations with the greats, the creators, and the performers of magic. Join Scott vicariously as he travels from convention to convention, recording your favorite magicians for history. Well worth listening to and very highly recommended. He gave me a one-star review. I'm guessing that when he posted the one star thinking, hey, you're number one, that's great, thank you for everything that you do. So you could tell, obviously, this person liked the podcast, but just gave it a one star. It kind of brought down the rating just a little bit. But in the overall scheme of things, there certainly are more five stars than just this one that I received. And I think that was in error when he meant to say all across the board, he liked it. She liked it. This person liked it, at least, and should have given that a five star. So when you are putting this together and you go and give a comment that is really great, I appreciate everything that you do, but also please leave a five star comment. So there you go. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to have compassion. This is Scotty out.